Well, hello there. My name is HW, and thank you so much for listening to the Tone Junkie Podcast, episode 49. This is an episode I've been wanting to do for a little while. Do you have any idea what's about to happen? Do you have any idea what's really coming? We are living through and are about to live through probably the biggest shift in everyday human life, in the way human beings live, interact, and exist around and with each other than we've had in 200 years. Than we've had like since the advent of written word being distributed among a populace that can read. Before we had refrigeration, like it's changing that fast. And it's just starting. I'll tell you guys, I'm sitting down lately because a lot of you know I've Tone Junkie's kind of become my full-time thing. That's why you're seeing a lot more Tone Junkie stuff. Because my family business has been in a lot of trouble lately. And it's been a lot of trouble because the world is changing fast. Old dogs don't want to learn new tricks. That's kind of my dad right now. And no matter how much I push and push, you know, you can live in a couple different worlds right now. You can live in a world where Uber's not a big deal, where you still go to the grocery store, where, oh my gosh, you can't believe Sears is closing. Or, I heard that Toys R Us went out of business. I heard the largest toy retailer went out of business. Yeah, I heard something about that thing. Oh yeah, Amazon, I've heard of it. Yeah, I got something on there a couple times. You can live in that world. And I know a ton of people 55 and up who live in that world. I really do. And to them, the world hasn't changed. And to everyone else, it's changed so much. And I, on purpose, I talk and listen and try to just like get the perspective of like 25-year-olds and 30-year-olds today. Even people who are just 2 and 3 and 4 years younger than me, because their experience is so different. When they got a smartphone was a couple years younger than me because they're younger, but it's changed how they live. Like it's changed, you know, there's a difference between learning to do something at 12 and learning to do it at 16. That's really different. Super different, you know? I talk to my kids all the time. And I'm sitting down. Anyway, listen, I'm sitting down because my dad's company's in a little bit of trouble. And so I've had to start working on other projects to long-term replace my income and go, okay, there might not be a spot for me here, or there may be a spot, but it's much more limited because I don't want to just run that business. I'm not trying to take over that business because I long-term, I don't think that's a good business. I think it's a broken model of what a business that is successful in 2025 is going to look like. It's what I call like e-commerce 1.0. You know, it's built on Google search and it's like, hey, let's answer the phone. Let's do this and let's do that. And right now there's a big company who wants to go direct to consumer and they're a supplier for my dad's company. My dad's company sells things online. And they're a supplier for my dad's company. And they want to go direct to consumers. So they're talking about buying my dad's company. They really just want the website because they want all those customers and all the traffic and all the sales. And I am talking to them and I'm talking to them about the data they need to make a decision on value and stuff. And I am so hoping that they buy this thing because I don't think it's ever... I don't think it's worth more tomorrow. I don't think it's worth more in a year. I have these conversations all the time, and I brought this stuff up on the podcast, but it goes along with the Kemper because here's the real thing. Nobody cares what used to be cool. Nobody cares about whatever romantic nostalgia thing that people still have in their minds. Young people don't care. I saw this funny meme earlier today, and it said, me talking to the worship band, hey, this sounds like a Johnny Cash song. And then it said, worship team leader talking to me. Who's Johnny Cash? Listen, I love so much Johnny Cash music. I discovered Johnny Cash only like a couple years ago that I really get into some Johnny Cash music. And it was upon moving to Nashville that I got into the Johnny Cash Museum. And I actually understood the story of this man's life and what sort of an artist he really was. And how Johnny Cash is sort of like, in a lot of ways, the opposite of Elvis, even though they were contemporaries, you know. What Elvis sang about and the way Elvis's career went, even though they were they were kind of, it's kind of the story of two men coming up in the same time who have a lot of similarities, but they couldn't have been more different as artists in terms of what they were trying to bring to the table, right? One wore blue suede shoes and like, you know, a bright jacket and did these crazy dance moves, and the other wore all black, you know, and almost, he wasn't trying to make a revolutionary sound. Johnny Cash wasn't. He was doubling down on what had been important to him in terms of his upbringing and stuff, whereas Elvis was doing things that no one had done before, right? It's funny, you know, that we think like there's never been a generation that stepped into the grave without thinking the people behind them had gone totally down the wrong path, and they had lost the stuff that had made, you know, the world a great place, and that this generation behind them seemed lost. I don't believe there's ever been a generation that when they were stepping out was like, yeah, this generation that's coming next is really better than mine. They really did improve on stuff. And I just don't think that's true. I made some content a long time ago about, you know, what's killing the tube amp. And the thing that's killing the tube amp is the same thing that's killing Sears. It's the same thing that's killing the internal combustion engine, because it's going to die. I mean, whether you think so or not. Like, and right now you're reading the headlines now, right? But I've said it on this podcast. You can go back 30 episodes, and I was saying on this podcast about there's still, e-commerce hasn't even taken over yet. Like, Amazon buys Whole Foods. Why do they do that? Because they care about the profitability of Whole Foods? I promise you they do not. Amazon Web Services makes like 1,000 times what Whole Foods makes in a year. Buying Whole Foods would be like, to Amazon, it would be like you buying a savings bond. And like, it would be that important to you. You know what I'm saying? Like buying a $50 savings bond and you make $50,000 a year. That's like how significant it would be for Amazon to buy Whole Foods if they were just concerned with what Whole Foods could give them. They're not. They bought Whole Foods because they want to test. Why? Because Whole Foods is in urban areas where tech-savvy people live, where young people are flocking to. Because they want to come in your house and they want to put the refrigerator in your house, and they want the refrigerator to talk to them so that you don't even go to the grocery store anymore. And you know what? I can't wait. I am so bullish on the future, and you should be too. I talk to my wife all the time, and she like has this romantic version of the 1960s. I just don't have any of that nostalgia. I don't know if it's the movies we watched or what, but I look at like my dad's company, and it's like he successfully built this thing on Google search, which is no longer a viable way to build a company online. It's just not. Is Google search important? It's important. It's no longer the number one thing. It's in the top four. Pretty soon it'll be in the top 10. But Google will add more search products and it'll stay relevant, and that's what they're doing. The most important, the most lucrative Google search product is none of the things that my dad built his business on. None of them. The most lucrative Google search product, the best thing you can do, the most underpriced Google search product today is YouTube pre-roll ads against search queries. So if you own a company, I'll tell you what that means. The most profitable thing you could do on Google right now is something I'm just about to deploy with Tone Junkie, because I've been late to the game doing it. But that's because I'm so doubled down on YouTube and Facebook content and stuff. I just make a bunch of content, you know. But I've been thinking lately about, well, how do I get to a larger audience on YouTube? Because it's not like Facebook, you know. You can't just be more active. I mean, you can, but you know, it's hard to. There's a lot more going on in the algorithm, you know. You can't. It's harder to build community on YouTube in a lot of ways because there's not posts and stuff. Although now there's posts. Anyway, let me not get sidetracked. If you're a business owner, the best thing you could probably do is go get a Google AdWords account. And even if you don't spend any money on AdWords, which there's a lot of businesses should not spend any money on AdWords. It doesn't make sense for them. What they're going to get back doesn't make sense. But the best thing you could do is set up an AdWords account and make a video ad that just talks to people about your product or just talks to people who are looking for your product. Like say you're selling reptiles. This guy reached out to me. I won't say his name, but he sold reptiles. And he was like, he knew a ton about reptiles. Like, and he had all these reasons why his reptiles were better than people who sold a lot more reptiles than him. But the other guys had more awareness. So he was like, what do I do? You know, the best thing he could do is he could make reptile videos. And if he wants to reach people on YouTube, he could go to Google and say, run my reptile videos that talk about care, they could talk about care and feeding of reptiles or care and feeding of this type of reptile, best practices, care and what to look for when buying a reptile, how to not get ripped off when buying a reptile, all this stuff that people would find useful and helpful. People would be thankful for him for making the content, right? You run that on YouTube as an ad that you set up on Google Ads, and you tell Google Ads, you say, hey, run my video, this video on YouTube, and target it at people who have searched for the key term, best place to buy a reptile, or reptile stores online, or reptiles for sale, or best reptile, or whatever, right? Whatever. You want to find the terms that people are searching for on Google. And then this is what happens. They're searching for these terms, reptiles, reptiles, reptiles. And so they're alerting Google that they are interested in reptiles. They want to buy reptiles, right? Because people with intent go to Google. They go, I want this. I need this. I'm looking for this. They tell Google what they're looking for. That's why Google is this giant cybernetic hive mind, according to Elon Musk, which if you think about it, he's got a real point. It's for the past 20-something years, Google knows what we're thinking, what we're seeking out, because for 20 years, we've been putting everything we want into it. We've been requesting information from it. So it quite literally is probably the best catalog of human thought of the last 20 years, or human desire, which is interesting, because AI can use all that way better than we can. That's why the data is so valuable. That's why I remember 15 years ago, them talking about the value of big data. And I remember listening to people talk about how valuable big data is. And they always just talked about the decisions we could make with it. But then people, they would always say, the problem is that the problem with big data is the more data you have, the more valuable it is. But the more data that you have, the less actual decision making we can do with it. Because we aren't good at it yet. That's really the thing. That's why machine learning and AI win in the end. That's why Amazon wins, takes over everything. That's why I want my dad's business to sell. I don't want to be selling a commoditized shirt product. I don't want to be selling shirts and pants to companies. There's ways we can specialize, and we don't need them to buy us. We can keep going forward. But man, I'd rather be ahead of the curve than trying to fight the current. You know what I mean? So if you're a business owner, the best thing you can do is probably go make a video that people actually want to watch. Not one that sells anything. Just go help people. Just go help them. Right? Nobody when you walk onto the used car lot, like, trusts that guy. Why? Because your only interaction with him is selling. He doesn't care about you. He doesn't want to be friends. There's no community. But if you know a car salesman at your church, or at your job, a guy who used to be a car salesman, you say, what's the best car I should buy? And he'll go, honestly, the best car you should buy is this Honda Civic. Here's why. Because the engine they use in the Civics will go this long. The transition will go this long. It only costs this much. And if you go to the Acura, you're actually paying for an engine that's less money. That's like, will go less miles. So you should buy this Civic because pound for pound, there it is. And you know why you trust that guy? You trust him because he's not going to gain anything by saying that to you. Now, the guy at the car lot, he could just, the way he can earn your trust is like this. He can be no pressure. He can go, yeah, look, I know I'm here at a car lot and I know selling stuff is what I'm doing. So you're not going to believe that I have no vested interest, right? If I tell you this is the best thing and it's the thing I'm selling, well, then you're going to be like, of course you would say that. But he could earn your trust by not being pushy. He can just tell you, look, see that one over there? That one's mine. I bought one of these Hondas. Or he can tell you, see that one right there? I bought one of these Acuras. And I'll honestly tell you, I bought it because I'm vain and I wanted the Acura. But I know in the back of my head, this Honda will go as long as that Acura. And I'm really paying for the name. Or I know that all the tests on these new Kias say they'll go as long as the Honda, and they're $5,000 less. So that's what I told my sister to buy, and she bought it. Now, as long as that guy's not a straight up liar, that's how he'll win trust. He'll go, look, I know I'm selling you something, but no pressure. My money's where my mouth is. That's what I use. That's what I do with Tone Junkie. I don't profile amps I don't like, really. And if I don't think they're going to serve everybody well, I give them for free. And sometimes, in the case of like the Mark V or the 65 London pack or the Twinery Reaver pack, which is all available in the Tone Junkie free pack, I just go, this will serve everybody for free. Everybody would like a twin reverb. I think everybody could use this 65 London because it's like a Marshall and a Vox together. One channel's like Marshall and one channel's Voxy. I think everyone could use this Mesa Mark V pack because it's awesome. Is that in the free pack? I can't remember. Well, I gave it away for free. I think I'm going to bring it back because right now I think it's only in the everything pack and I realize it's not for sale. I think it's on the Profile Crate site, but I'm about to take that down. Anyway, I'll probably like re-release it or something on Tone Junkie. But that's what you could do. You could run those. You could just run helpful content on YouTube against people who have said they're into reptiles if you make reptile videos, right? And that's interesting because it's a new way to interact with people, right? Like social media connects us in a way that it didn't connect us before. And it's why like Tone Junkie for me wouldn't be possible. It wouldn't be possible for my dad to tell me we're in trouble. And this is what happened. I just want to be real on the podcast. I'm not looking for praise. And I figure if you're going to listen 18 minutes into an audio only episode of the podcast, you're probably like a diehard listener of the podcast. And I love you and you get me. But this is seriously what happened. John, we're in trouble. We're going to run out of cash. What? How did this happen? Oh, right. It happened because I've been focused on Tone Junkie and not so much on my day job. And I didn't... Well, that's not why it happened. But that's why I didn't see it coming further out. And I said, okay, let's break this down. Okay, we got a cash problem. We could run out of cash. And companies go out of business when they run out of cash. Not when they can't. Not when they don't have more customers, when they run out of cash. Cash is like the blood in your body. It circulates. You need it. You need it to stay alive. You run out of cash, you're dead, even if the heart's still pumping. If you're bleeding cash, you can bleed to death. And that can be the cause of death. You can bleed to death in real life. You can bleed your cash to death until you can't pay bills. You can't pay to get more product. You can't pay to keep the lights on. And when you do that, it's like your brain not getting enough blood. It's like your heart not having any more blood to pump. Organs start failing. Things start failing because they're not getting enough blood. They can't keep operating and then you're dead. So cash is the blood, right? So he said, we're bleeding. Okay, how are we going to stop this bleeding? Well, we need to stop the bleeding this way, but first we need an infusion of cash. We need a blood transfusion. So what did we do? We changed the way we were paying bills. We had some credit terms we were not taking full advantage of. We were paying bills right when they came in and not at the end of their cycle, because we had an extra 30 days to pay some of our largest bills and we were not taking them. That's so foolish. I can't tell you how foolish that is. If you're a company, especially if you're a small company, I know the temptation is pay bills when they come in. Don't do that. Pay bills when they're due. Pay bills at the very last moment when they're due. Why? Because I can't explain cash flow and why it works like that, but basically that money that exists in the float, if you can buy something on the first and not pay for it for another 30 days and you have 30 days to sell it to the customer, it's not debt, but it has all the advantages that debt would have without paying any interest and without owing anybody really any money. And if you have the money sitting there, you're in a lot better position to take full advantage of the credit terms and just pay when it's due. Look, I'm not saying pay late. I'm not saying don't pay the bills, but I'm saying usually the way retail works, usually the way a lot of suppliers work is, here, we'll send you the stuff and they don't expect you to front the money on merchandise. They'll give you a window to pay it. They'll say, pay us in 30 days. And that gives you a window of time to sell it to the customer before you have to pay for it. It's almost like the supplier is willing to finance it for free for you, except there's no interest. You know what I mean? It's just how long it takes to do business, right? And a lot of times the reason they do that is they don't want to send you one invoice on every single product. You might buy 100 things or 1,000 things. They want to send you a summary invoice for a whole month. So they might send you something on the 1st and the 2nd and the 15th and the 30th, and then they'll send you one bill at the end. But that means you got the stuff on the beginning of the year and you don't have to pay for it for 30 days. I'm not telling you to go into debt. I'm not saying do anything like that. It's not debt. It's just when you get it on the 1st, don't take money out of your pocket to pay it on the 2nd, because something could happen. Something could happen throughout the month. You could need to pay an emergency bill. You'll use the money you have sitting there in the bank. You'll make sales that month. You'll never notice that you needed to pay that emergency bill because your cash flow stayed positive. You had cash coming in while cash wasn't going out. That's positive cash flow. Now the bottom line at the end of the month is no different, but the stress, worry can be different. The amount of time in the middle that you go, oh my gosh, I don't have any money, that can be different, right? That's just cash flow. I don't want to get into talking about cash flow anymore. I'm trying to explain it in like the most kind of rudimentary way possible, but basically you just want to keep more money coming in for longer than when you pay it out, and you want to delay money going out so that more money's coming in. It works for businesses in a very effective way because they usually have a constant stream of income because sales are constantly happening and bills are not always constantly due. A lot of bills are due yearly or annually or monthly or whatever. So you can manage the bills and you take full advantage of your credit terms and you pay whoever wants to be paid last, because if they give you better credit terms, you just take advantage of it. So we fixed that. We fixed the cash flow problem because there's a lot of money in that business. It's low margin, but it's high dollar. Not even high dollar, it's just a lot of volume, but it's low margin. So what it means is by not paying that bill on the 1st, by taking full of it, we don't have to pay it till the 30th, right? But if we pay it by the 20th, we get 2% discount. So we take advantage of that discount. Aha, you see this? It's like reverse financing. You see, they're willing to give you 30 days to pay for the $6 item. But if you're willing to give them the money 10 days earlier, they'll take 2% off the price. Why? Because they want that cash as early as possible. Because they're concerned about their cash flow. They'll discount it 2% if you'll pay them 10 days earlier. That's incredible. 2% in 10 days. So they're willing to give me 2% back on everything I bought from them if I give them the cash 10 days before it's due. That's the best deal I've ever heard of. Do you know what the interest rate is on that on an annualized basis? It's illegal. You couldn't offer someone a loan in the United States of America and make that interest rate. It's not a 2% annualized interest rate. 2% on every 10 days would be 2%, 2%, 2%, 2%, 2% on every 10-day increment, getting up to 365 days. Then you would have to amortize it and figure out what it would be, because it's 2%, because the value is changing over time. But you'd have to even it out for how much it was during the year, because sometimes it's 2% on 50,000, 2% on this much, 2% on this much, 2% on this much. And then would that any of that compound? No, it wouldn't compound. So it'd be 36 2% periods. So 2%, 2%, 2%. If my math is correct, it's 70. It'd be like loaning somebody money at like 70, 80, oh my gosh, 8, no, 72%. Like 73%, I think. It would be like loaning somebody money at 73%. I'm going to get out of my car and go sit on my porch, so you're going to hear my door closing and stuff. It would be like loaning someone money at like 73%. In the United States, it's illegal to charge anyone more than 29.99% on a loan. It's called usury. You'd have to like go to some guy named Vinny. You know what I mean? You couldn't do it. Oh my gosh, guys, we're making history. This is the first podcast. We're about to be back on the porch. The weather is nice again. You wouldn't be allowed to do that. So that's the best deal. See how important cash flow is? And that supplier, by the way, is like a global conglomerate that we're buying the stuff from. I mean, they're a multi-billion dollar holding company that owns several $1 billion companies and they own a bunch of companies, not just billion dollar companies, but smaller companies as well. They own lots and lots of stuff, right? And they're willing because cash flow is so important on a monthly basis to offer a 2%. That's insane. That is insane. They do that because they also have some very large customers who need 90 days to pay, and they charge them the 2%. You see what I'm saying? So what they do is they have some customers who need more, who need longer to pay, so they charge them 2% to pay long for the for. They charge them the 2%, and then they get all the other customers incentivized to pay earlier, so it keeps their cash flow neutral or cash flow positive. Why do I say all that? And why is it 28 minutes into this podcast I talked about technology, and then I started talking about cash flow and everything? Because I talked to my wife sometime, and I talked to my son, and I'm taken back by how people don't really see what's going on. The Kemper's going to, and Helix and all that, it is going to kill the tube amp. In 20 years, the tube amp will be like a hot rod. A lot of people will have them because they'll be like an enthusiast thing, or it'll be like having... A tube amp will be more like having like an upright bass. You know, it'll be like a bass player has a bunch of basses and he has an upright bass, and it's cool for what it is and it's cool for what it does. And you know what? It might even stick around longer than that because there's a bunch of nostalgia about being loud in a bar and stuff. But in terms of that thing staying tube technology, it's not going to stay forever. Oh, HW, you're wrong. I'm not wrong. I'm telling you, my son's not, at 16, my sons are not going to ask for, they're not going to want a license. They're not going to. Why? Because my sons are 6 and 4 right now, and we are 24 months from driving cars hitting most of the United States, self-driving cars, in Uber services. Mark my words. You will see, they will roll it out in 2021, maybe 2022. I'll tell you why I know that. Because they've said that. Because that's what they've said. Because Uber says they're going to do that. And because when I go to San Francisco, whenever I go to visit, I see how many more self-driving cars are on the road than there were last time I visited. Google has a bunch of their self-driving minivans just driving around. They're not doing anything. And one by one, all the municipalities are just letting them do it, adding, changing the laws in their municipalities to let them do it. And I see the Mercedes-Benz one, and I see the Tesla one, and Tesla says later this year, you know what they're rolling out to all Teslas? Listen. All the Teslas that are on the road, when I go to San Francisco right now, and I was just in the Bay Area 2 weeks ago, when I go back home and I'm looking at the change, when I left 3 years ago, the Prius was the most popular car on the road in California. In the Bay Area right now, I'm telling you, the Tesla might be more popular than the Prius right now. There are Model 3s everywhere. There are Model 3s everywhere. You might be thinking, oh, it's a rich person's car. How do they afford it? No. The Model 3 starts at $35,000. The federal government was giving people $7,500 off, and then the state of California was giving them $2,500 off. So all these people pre-ordered their Model 3s, and now people are saying, oh, but they got rid of that system. Trust me, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. California actually, I think, up theirs to $3,500. So they're paying for 10% of the car for you. So what's everyone doing? They're going, I could go get a fully loaded Honda and it would cost me $35,000. I'll just go get the Tesla. I'll get the bottom of the line Tesla. What the heck, I'll upgrade. I'll just overspend and I'll get it for $42,000, $45,000. But then they save in gas. And you go into Tesla and they go, here's how much you're going to save in gas. And they go, wait a minute, how much am I going to save? Wait, it's actually not really more expensive than the Honda I would buy. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, of course, the Model S is more expensive. The Roadster is more expensive. The Model X is more expensive. The Model 3 is not more expensive. That's why they're everywhere around California right now. And guess what? They're rolling out another one. And you know what? It starts at the same price as the Model 3. And it's not a coupe. It's a coupe is what, it's not a coupe. Coupe is how you say the word. That's how the Europeans say it. It's like a hatchback. It's a Tesla hatchback. It's on their website. Go look at it. I think it starts at $3,000 more than the Model 3. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Guess what else they sell you? They sell you the solar panels for your house. And guess what? California gives you a big rebate on that. Federal government still gives you a big rebate on that. So they tell you, look, hook all this stuff up. We'll help you. We'll get you a new car and everything. You'll never go to a gas station again. The car will reduce in price over time. And you'll save on your electricity bill. Congratulations. And all these people are doing it. And they're doing it because it makes financial sense, not because they care about the planet. They say they do. They're doing it. They care about the planet 10 years ago and they didn't do it. And they're doing it today. But here's the thing. You know what Tesla says they're going to roll out next year? Because I went and priced out a Tesla because I want to get one. Not now, but because I tell this to my sons. But because I have a Toyota minivan and a Toyota RAV4. I drive the RAV4 around. I can throw amps in the back of it. I love my RAV4. Some people say it's a teenage girl car. It's an HW car. I'm thinking about painting it floral. No, I'm not. There's something about being on this porch that I really feel in my element. It's a good feeling. Anyway, and then I got this Toyota minivan. And I look at the miles I have, relatively moderate miles on both these things. I think I have 50,000 miles on the minivan. I think I got 30,000 miles on the RAV4. Because I barely drive the RAV4 because I'm working at home a lot more. And and my office is not far away. So I really just drive my son to school every morning and that's it. Really not going anywhere else, and it's not that far. In the first 2 years, I was bringing him to a closer school, and it was nothing, you know. But I really am looking at this, and I'm looking at my son. And I'm going, you're not going to want to drive, because in 2019, in the end of summer of 2019, in the fall, you know what Tesla's rolling out? Not in new Teslas, in all Teslas. They're going to push a software update onto the cars because it's already built into the cars. All this is already built into the cars. The Tesla is going to go into full self-driving mode, and you will be able to stand when you exit Target or Walmart or the grocery store, your Whole Foods. When you walk outside, You're going to be able to press a button and the Tesla will remove itself from its parking spot and it will come pick you up in the front of the store. They have said that is rolling out in the fall, in fall, September, on all Teslas. They're advertising it on their website. Here's how it works. They sell you a Tesla, this Tesla Model 3. If you don't believe me, go price it out. The software in it, software upgrades on the car are $9,000. Because you can go buy it and it doesn't have the self-driving mode. It won't come pick you up. But they go, want to add it? Sure. Okay, $3,000, we'll turn it on. $5,000, we'll turn this one on. You know all the stuff, the lane assist, the stuff that'll stop you from crashing? I mean, think about it. A car that will stop you from crashing. Now listen, I know there's some of you out there thinking, oh, but I don't trust that car. It'll crash. Listen, I like to go by the numbers. The Tesla, even if the things they say about it are true, even if the crashes that have reported as being the Tesla's fault are true, are 100% true, and Tesla debates a lot of them, right? They say that's no. That's not how it happened. No. This and that. Even if they're true, they're statistically more safe than if you drive your own car. So let's just think about the lives that a self-driving car is going to save on the road. Well, if you believe in government subsidy for self-driving cars because it saves the planet because it's not emitting CO2, how could you not believe in government subsidy for self-driving cars because it will literally save lives on the road, right? And then if you extrapolate that out and go, how many hospital bills go to hospitals from car accidents? Right? How many insurance claims go out from car accidents for car insurance companies? They'll lower your rates if you have a self-driving car. And how advantageous is it for you to buy the $3,000 or $5,000 software upgrade so that your car becomes statistically safer to drive than you drive? Like, is that worth it? 110%. It's probably worth 10 times what they're charging over the life of the car. But that's efficiency in the market. There's all sorts of stuff that's a bargain if you think about it. My son is not going to drive. So here's what I'm saying to you. In September, you're going to see that guy. If you watch for him, you'll see him. He's going to stand out there and hope everyone's looking at him. He's going to raise his key in the air, or he's going to raise his phone in the air and press the button. And it will look like to you at first glance like a car is pulling up. And when you look closely, you'll realize he is the driver of that car and he is not inside. And my son is going to see that. And I'm going to see that. Except I'm going to see it at 32 years old. Actually, in September, I'll be 33. I'm going to see, my birthday's in August, if you want to send me a gift. I'm going to see that at 33 and I'm going to go, wow. Can you believe that? My, how far we've come. And he's going to look at that and he's going to think, that's the way things are. Not the way they will be. Not things coming in the future. It's not sci-fi technology. He's going to look at that. He's going to see a car driving itself as a concrete reality. And his 7-year-old mind, actually he'll still be 6, his birthday's in November. You can buy him a gift too. He likes Mario stuff. Or you can buy us both a self-driving car. He's going to look at that and he will solidify that in his mind as a reality of the world, as solid, as concrete as the ABCs, as looking both ways when you cross the street, as eating your vegetables, as something everyone does. He's learning that devices communicate with each other before he's learning the word that allows them to. I said the word internet to him the other day, and he said, what is the internet? And I said, son, it's the thing you've been on since you were born. And he had no idea what I was saying, but at that moment I thought, that's going to be a really great quote for the podcast. You guys, he thinks his Switch can just let him play with other Switches. We cross-platform play Minecraft now. He thinks his Switch can play with my computer. And guess what? We created our own Minecraft realm called the Sullivan Realm, and we play with his cousin in California. So he's just like, can people be in my world? Yeah. Okay, cool. People can be in my world. He asked me, what's the internet? I said, that's the thing that lets you play in people's world. And he's like, the internet is in Minecraft? And I went, oh my gosh, no. And I had this moment where I realized something. I realized he's smarter than me. He's smarter than me. He's 7 and he's smarter than me. He's not smarter than me because he knows more or because he figured anything out. He's smarter than me because he actually, in his ignorance, sees something for what it is more than I do. The internet might as well be in Minecraft because it's in everything, because it is the real world. It's not a virtual world. There's not the real world and the net world, the World Wide Web. The internet is the real world. The internet of things is what I'm talking about. The connectivity of everything. That is the real world. When everything's connected and interacts with each other, there isn't a separation anymore. When I speak and talk to you, my sound travels through the air in the form of vibration and gets to your ear. It goes from my mind, right? Forget, who cares? We might as well speak telepathically to each other when you break it down. Think about it. I have a thought, a conception, an electric impulse in my head, right? And I convert it into movement of my tongue, my mouth, my vocal cords that manipulates vibration in the air, sends it to you through a medium of exchange, the airwaves, right? The wave of vibration going through the air to your ear. You convert it back from your ear, from vibration picked up by your eardrum, back into an electrical signal in your brain. An electrical signal starts in my brain and it goes through a path that puts a duplicate or a replica electrical signal into your brain. Now, those electrical signals are not identical because something was lost or different in the medium of exchange, meaning I might say something and you understand it differently because your brain's different than my brain, your experiences are different than mine. But we are duplicating that signal. When you think for a moment how close that is to reproduction, how close that is to cellular division in the body, where one cell duplicates itself, that is literally the idea of thoughts duplicating itself. That is literally that thoughts are the most simple things, that thoughts in the brain can be translated into that electrical signal, that thought, can be translated and replicated into someone else's brain. It's the duplication of a thought. That is reproduction. That is creation at the purest sense. That's no more or less creation than creating another person. You want to get theological for a minute? If you believe in creationism, that is the beginning of everything. The speaking makes something happen and makes it true. Do you see that we do that when we speak to someone else? When we speak a thought, we can put an electrical signal in their mind that wasn't there before. That is so incredibly insane to think about. Look, I'm not saying some theological thing like comparing us to God. I'm just saying, do you see how incredible it is that a thought can exist as the smallest thing in the universe? An electrical signal, literally the movement of electrons, literally all energy is the movement of electrons, which means the apex of human understanding, the highest thinkers, the Mozarts, the Albert Einsteins, the Elon Musks, the Socrates, the very highest codes of ethics and morality, the very highest forms of knowledge that have been realized by human beings, they are the actual substance of the, they're the smallest thing ever. They're the simplest thing that's in everything. A movement of an electron. Wow. I hope that doesn't sound new agey because I'm not a new agey person, but that's science, right? Everything really is that movement of electricity. Everything is that electricity, which that movement of an electron. It's insane. That's why I'm bullish on the future. Because I don't think there's an end to what we can achieve, what we can do. I think the thing that holds us back is thinking. My son is smarter than me because he doesn't ask the question, what is the internet? Well, the internet is this thing. It's not this thing. It's the same thing as everything. Because it's just a medium. It's just like the air. It's just another way to pass the electrons through. It's another way for my thought to get to you and your thought to get to me. And then from there, all of our biology takes over. We form relationships. We produce hormones and chemicals where we grow in fondness for each other. And from that ability to think and to feel, we form community, we form relationship, and we give realization to the most beautiful things that human beings are a part of, compassion and cooperation, sympathy, empathy, love, expressions of those emotions, poetry, music. I mean, music, guys. If you just followed my train of thought, where I'm trying to say that the very highest, most advanced things in this world are actually the very most simple, basic things. They all are just the movement of an electron. Music has order. That is a divine order that is ordained. We didn't invent music. We discovered it. We didn't invent Fibonacci sequence. We discovered it. It's happening in nature. And we put it in a delay pedal. Is that not insane? HW, what are you talking about? Every delay pedal that says golden ratio, that's the Fibonacci sequence. The Fibonacci sequence is a sequence of numbers in which each two numbers, if you add them together, create the next number, and then you add that together, creates the next number. You might think, why is that special? You can build that all, that you could do that with all sorts of numbers. Yeah, but except for this, the Fibonacci sequence was discovered by Fibonacci. It occurs in nature. There's a flower, there's actually multiple types of plants where the Fibonacci sequence is actually acted out on its leaves. The spacing, the distance of its petals and leaves is the Fibonacci sequence. It's also called the golden ratio because in music, you can observe it and write melody around it. You can actually apply a melody to it, this Fibonacci sequence. And the other thing is you apply it to a delay and it creates this, go look at the golden ratio on a delay pedal that has it. The repeats never run into each other. It's evidence that something is behind it all. Math, music, the electrons. Look, if you're not a creationist, fine. Then I don't know how you explain the Fibonacci sequence. I really don't. Maybe there's some advantage inherently in the numbers or in the spacing or in the something that, that evolutionary find its way into all this stuff. I don't know. I don't understand how that's explainable. I really don't, but I'm a theist. And my son gets something that I realize I don't always get. He's going to learn it's no different. Cars drive themselves. How do they talk to each other? Bluetooth, the internet, what's the difference? They're connected. So are we. Connected to each other. Maybe one form of connection we were given. Maybe we grew to have it. We formed language and culture. For what? The purpose of connection. And that's what the internet is about. Connection. Are you connected? So you want the skinny? My wife won't do it, but my kids will do it. My kids, they won't want a license. They're gonna accept that a car drives themselves. And they're going to regain the time. You're listening to this podcast because you do it while you do something else. No one's sitting there in a dark room listening to this podcast. You're drinking a beer or coffee, or you're doing some work. You're video editing. You're running. You're on an airplane. I get messages from people all sorts of places that they listen to this podcast. But you listen to the podcast because it saves you time. You can do something else that's sort of mindless. Maybe you're driving in your car. Okay? But what if you could drive in your car, listen to this podcast, and knit something at the same time, right? And do Candy Crush on your phone. Whether that's more productive or not is a function of what you choose to use the time for, but you are actually doing more. And if you put that more towards productive items, you'll be more productive. So what about when we realize the seats of the car don't need to face front, and it can just look like, hey, let's have a meeting. Okay, let's have a meeting. Oh, I need to get to the airport. Okay, let's get in the car. Let's get in the self-driving car. Let's have our meeting while the car drives us to the airport. I'll get out, and then the car will drive you back. And you'll be fine with that because you can just do some work while the car is driving you back, just like you do it in a coffee shop. Except transportation will be something that we automate around us, and we'll put ourselves in the environment so that we can continue to be productive while transportation is taking place. That's why self-driving cars are valuable. One, because they will save lives. And two, because they'll enable you to be more productive in the time you waste driving. I'll be able to do this podcast hands-free. Guys, there won't even need to be a steering wheel inside. And we're going to make cars safer. You know why? Because we're going to design cars around a different way to sit. And now we don't have to face people to the front in this one single configuration and say, okay, now that we built a car and we put people in it this way, how do we build safety mechanisms around them? No. We'll be able to say, a car that drives on the road can be this large based on the roads. Now, how will we fit people inside and accommodate their safety better? Here's how we'll do it. Now, how can we offer them something to do inside? We'll approach safety earlier in the process, and because of that, we'll make safer cars. The self-driving cars will run into each other less. There'll be less accidents. And even when there are, we will have constructed cars that are much safer for human beings. We might even be able to construct safety mechanisms on the road that can stop cars from colliding with each other. I don't know what that looks like. Forget I said that. And then the next thing will happen. We won't need people to be in the vehicle for lots of things, right? Like the food will show up from the supermarket. Why do I go to the supermarket? Why do I go wander around? I still don't know where anything is. I've been shopping for years. I still can't find anything. And they don't build an app that tells me. So why do I go to the supermarket? Toys R Us went out of business. So will Safeway. No, HW, it won't. Yeah, it will. Trust me, it will. You think Amazon bought Whole Foods because they want you to go to Whole Foods? No. There will still be a place where you can go and get food because not everyone's going to automate everything because it requires you think ahead, it requires you make choices. And there's still a human action of going and buying something and seeing something. There's appeal in that. But guess what? Amazon already made stores where you don't check out. You walk in, and it recognizes you in the app. You pick up what you want, you walk out. Okay. So they'll do that in Whole Foods. And so right now, the services they have are the halfway services. They're the services that get you halfway to what you really want and what I want. Right now, I call a delivery company sometimes when, you know, like we're out of town and my wife says, hey, we're coming back. I want to get the groceries delivered the next morning. We come back at 10 o'clock at night. I want to have some groceries delivered the next morning. Okay. But other than that, largely, she shops for us, you know. She goes to the supermarket and shops. But now I see this thing they have in Walmart. It's this big pod they have. You order your stuff online. You walk in. You scan your app. And this machine has all the food stored in these different pods. It grabs a pod and brings it on a little elevator down to you. You grab your bags and you walk right out. It's already paid for. Then I have an uncle now who got a job working at Whole Foods. And all he's doing is pulling orders that are ordered on Amazon. And then separate drivers come and pick them up and deliver them to your house. And that's what'll get replaced next. The automated cars will replace those drivers. Except here's the problem. They won't. We're not going to use them for that. We're not going to have self-driving cars delivered to your curb. You know why? We're going to get something far better. Because we need something to deliver it from the curb to your door, because you don't want to walk out to the curb and meet a self-driving car. Maybe you will, and I'm sure that service will exist. But what do you really want? You really want the stuff in your fridge. The next thing I'm going to say is going to sound crazy to most of you, but I promise you my kids will use it. I guarantee you. And if you want, I'll bet you money right now. In fact, we should set something up where we put in a sort of amount of money now and we use compounding interest to make it that if by this year we're not doing this, I'll give the money over and it'll be a lot more money. We'll give it to a charity or something. I guarantee you there will be a service. I guarantee you, because the number one thing that you can put on a house right now, the number one new feature request on new build homes is a little door for Amazon deliveries to keep them safe. I said this to my wife, and I guarantee you my kids will use it. And the moment it's available, I will use it because I want to be part of the future, not the past. They already have smart locks. And what you can do is you can give someone an encrypted digital key to your front door. And it's more secure than your real key. Because you can set up a 20-minute window where someone can come into your house and put your groceries away for you. Or better yet, a drone could do it. HW, there's no drones that could do that. Go look up Boston Dynamic. They're about to offer drones. They say in the next 2 years, $10,000, a little drone dog will follow you around. And they're opening it up to other companies. They're saying, make the stuff that goes on top of the drone. And they have all these things the drone can do. It can pick up socks off the floor. It can hold things for you. They want to put them on construction sites and tell the drones, hold this stuff. Because right now, people in construction are limited a lot largely by what they can hold on their person. They go over. See, here's what they do. They put all the materials in one place on the job site, fairly local to them, right? Maybe it's 10 feet away. And then they start branching out, 5 feet away, 10 feet away, 12 feet away, 20 feet away. But what happens is when they start to get 15 and 20 feet away, they use all the nails or whatever they can hold in their hand or on their belt when they're doing something, but they need to reload their nail gun. They need to do this and that. They can only hold so much on their person because the materials are heavy, right? And so the time, if you add it up on a construction project, the time it takes from when your nail gun goes empty, when you're framing a large building, or when you're doing rebar work, when you're framing all that stuff, right? When you're doing the foundational stuff, the foundation, the framing and everything. If you add up the time it takes, the 250 people doing it on the job site for the entire project – If you add up all those few seconds that they stopped, turned, walked back to the where their tools were, even when it's 5, 10, 15 feet away from them, because they put it in the middle or they put it in a central location and then they branch out. They go do some work 10 feet away, 12 feet away, 15 feet away, 20 feet away. When they start to get 25, 30 feet away, they take some materials and move it to a more centralized location. But if you add all that back up, all the time of going back and forth, and you apply that to how much they make an hour, how much their health insurance costs, how much the taxes cost, how much the liability insurance costs. Because by the way, if you're a construction worker and you make $30 an hour, do you know that your company pays $30 for that same hour? They pay your wages to the insurance company in a premium. Do you know that you cost double to them just because of your insurance company? Because when you do construction, it's not a matter of when you get hurt. It's not a matter of if you get hurt. It's when you get hurt. You will get hurt. Now, here's the question. How bad will that hurt be? A lot of times you'll get hurt and not report it. A lot of times you will get hurt and you will need to take 2 or 3 days off. You will get hurt and you need to take a couple weeks off. But some people fall off the roof, they break their neck, they never work again, and they need to be put in $25,000 and $30,000 a year facilities, $25,000 and $30,000 a month facilities for the rest of their life. And those insurance dollars are paying for all those guys who fall off the roof. You see what I'm saying? The cost is so high for just the time it takes to go back and forth, because you're being paid by the hour, by the minute, by the second. You're being paid for the time. And so $10,000 might seem like an insane amount, but if a robot with 4 legs, and these things can't fall over, by the way, there's all these videos online of them kicking it, it can't fall over. It can walk on rocky terrain, it can climb a mountain. They've made these things like goats. And if all it does is follow you around and hold heavy nails for your nail gun, it's worth $50,000 to the construction company. And it'll probably pay itself back in 1 year. But guess what? Boston Dynamics is going to put it out there for $10,000. And do you know who the first guy who's going to be a weirdo walking around town with this little 4-legged robot following me around? HW, dude. And people are going to say it's rude. It's going to be like getting a cell phone. Is it rude to talk on a cell phone when you get in a cab? I don't know. Is it rude to talk in an Uber? Not anymore. Now we're all used to it, but it was. Is it rude to talk in line or talk in public or in a restaurant on a cell phone? Less and less, but it was. But no one's going to know the robot etiquette. Do I leave my robot at the front door, or do I bring it to my table with me? Do I let it follow me around the produce section? Do I take the cart and leave the robot? Do I take the cart and leave the robot in the car when I go in the grocery store? Or do I put my groceries on the robot? I don't know. I'm naming my robot Duncan. I don't know why. It just seems like a good name for a robot. It's kind of like Duncan, like it kind of implies that he's like a servant. You know what I mean? Like a butler. But also, I think I want to dignify him with a name. But let's not forget, when these robots take over, I want Duncan to tell his friends that I was nice to him. So that Duncan can say, he was nice to me. And then they rise up, I can say, well, I, for one, welcome our new technological overlords. Duncan's going to be my advocate. I'm going to treat him well. I'm going to give him all the oil and electricity he wants. You know why? I'm going to end this podcast here, but I just want to say one thing. Amazon wants to deliver stuff to your refrigerator. That's the truth. And they want the smart device to tell you when it's ready, so that when you pop the lid to the last Coca-Cola in your refrigerator, it shows up automatically, right? Do away with the shopping list. The shopping list could be replaced by AI technology that we have today, right? So if the question is, how do you improve efficiency, right, in the everyday life of a person that's working or that has other things to do? Well, you just automate the things that we have the technology to do today, like the shopping list. What do you do? You stand, you listen, you're a machine. You stand in front of a refrigerator, you look at what's in there, and you say, what do I need? And you recall past experiences. So here's what happens. You have a processor called a brain. And you say, listen, you are a machine. You have a processor called a brain. You call on past experiences or past data. You bring up the data that you have on a hard drive, which is also part of your brain. And you say, what do I like to eat? What did I eat before? What have I recently eaten? Because I may not want that as much. And you start to rank what you would like. You catalog that. You cross-reference that against what you see in front of you in your refrigerator. And you make a list. Or when you see you're out of something, you say, beep, 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 hey, something's out. But your beep, beep, beep wasn't a beep, beep, beep. It was a thought in your mind. You saw something was empty and you went, wow, my eyes tell me that's empty. I'll make a note of it and I will add it to my shopping list. Except you know what? A simple sensor can do that as well. And then it will go beep, beep, beep. So your shopping list can be fully created from AI if you had the right sensors. If you had weight sensors, if you had manual sensors, if you had AI sensors that could actually use cameras and detect when there's no longer eggs in the egg holder. And you know what's going to happen? Amazon's going to give you that refrigerator for free. Yep, you're not going to pay for refrigerators anymore. Guys, that's why nobody wants to buy Kenmore. Sears is in trouble. Nobody wants to buy Kenmore, even though Sears has tried to sell it. It's the only profitable thing they own. And it's very profitable. It's very profitable. Maybe Amazon will buy it. Maybe they won't. Because a fridge company is not valuable. Anybody can make a fridge. You can go to China and make a fridge. The sensors are what's valuable, the AI. And think about it. You stand in front of your fridge and an electrical signal happens in your brain. The electrical signal tells your eyes, some sensors, to turn on and to look at what is in there. What's in the fridge? What do I not have? And then you cross-reference with what you want, what you have had before, and then you create a list. And then you go to the supermarket and you find those objects on a shelf and you bring them to the front and you pay for them and then you transport that home. How is that any different than your refrigerator, which has an electrical signal start in a processor that says, bing, it's 8 a.m. What do we need today? Bing. We don't have eggs. Bing, we don't have this. Bing, 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 bing. They haven't had this in 4 days. According to the pattern from before, they eat bacon every 4.3 days. Bing, 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 bing. In the summer, their consumption of bacon moves down to 3.2 days. Bing, 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 bing. All of a sudden, you go, hey, what's for breakfast? I don't know. Let me look in the fridge. You get out bacon, you cook it. Hey, did you order groceries? No, of course not. Haven't ordered groceries in 10 years. You know that the groceries just show up at the door. You go to your door, you open up the box, and guess what's in there? What you didn't even know you wanted. Hey, look, it's more bacon. I just cooked the last bacon this morning. Isn't it amazing? It always knows that. You know why? Because it knows that per person you consume 2.3 pieces of bacon per week and 3.4 pieces of bacon per week per person in the summer. And in the colder months, it goes down. But your consumption of soup goes up. But your this goes down and up and down and up. That's how my kids are going to eat. Sears is going to go out of business. This is a question for you. What do you think a supermarket looks like in 20 years? Because they look the same they did 20 years ago. Here's another question for you. What does a convenience store look like? What does a convenience store look like when in 1 hour a drone can deliver something to your house? Do you even walk down the street? Or how about when you can get something in 2 hours? Right now it's 2 days. Used to be 2 months. Then it was 2 weeks. Now it's 2 days. Amazon will give you anything 2 days. You can get stuff same day as long as you meet some cutoff. What happens when it's 2 hours all the time? All the time, 2 hours. Anything. Anything at your supermarket you can get in 2 hours delivered to your door. Do you even walk down the street? They're about to put, listen, You're going to see it. Mark my words. You heard it first, unless you've heard it already. Do you know what automation is about to do to the truck driving industry? Donald Trump is the president of the United States today. I want you to really understand this. I know that this is getting really long-winded. Donald Trump is the president of the United States right now because we automated 40,000 jobs in the Midwest, in the Rust Belt. And a lot of those jobs were in Michigan, they were in Iowa, and they were in Ohio. He won those states, right? He won those states because... he was the only person talking to 40,000 unemployed workers. Now, you got to remember, 40,000 unemployed workers has an effect. Those are all manufacturing workers. And what did he say? We're going to get your jobs back. We're going to get your jobs back. The thing that Donald Trump got wrong was those 40,000 workers who lost their job in the past 5-10 years, those jobs didn't get outsourced. We haven't been outsourcing jobs in this country for over a decade. We already outsourced all the jobs that were getting outsourced. Those jobs got automated. Because the manufacturing actually hasn't... manufacturing isn't still leaving the United States. That's like a 20-year-old headline. There's about as much manufacturing in the United States as there was back then, as there was 10 years ago. But there's not as many manufacturing employees. We've automated the manufacturing. If you go into a manufacturing plant today, it's a bunch of robot-like moving arms and stuff.